Chapter 6, West Hendon. Our years at Oxford were very happy on the whole, and we enjoyed the annual intake of students coming up to the various colleges, bringing with them an intellectual freshness which did no harm, and an intellectual vigour which did positive good. Ecclesia situated in university cities, yet used to this periodic intake of young people with questing brains, who might shock other more staid ecclesias with their new ideas, and tend to be able to take them in, let them have their fling, and send them out at the end a little less radical, while the old Mother Church continues her well-set path, awaiting the next intake of reforming spirits. I think Oxford is particularly good at this, and in our time there we had a number of excellent young men studying at college who have become able speakers and enthusiastic leaders in the body. Some, of course, get carried away by the intellectual opportunities which the university education affords, and are lost to us. But on the whole, the gains are probably as great as the losses, and in any case, the widening of the net of higher education means that more and more of our young people are going to take university courses. Some attempts have been made to stem the tide and to suggest that this tendency is wrong and that Christadelphian youngsters should be prevented from taking up these opportunities for advanced education because of the moral and intellectual dangers involved. While it is obviously true that there are such dangers, one feels that to try to protect and shelter them is wrong, and that the best course is probably to try to help them to meet and overcome the temptations by strong parental and ecclesial support. In any case, it seems to me a Canute-like endeavour, as parents are often the most anxious for their children to have the advantage of such educational opportunities. This tape is a continuation of Chapter 6 of the book 50 Years of Christadelphian, which was commenced on tape number 2, side 2. I was speaking a few years ago at a youth weekend, and sat at table with a bright group of young men, so decided to do a little market research, and asked each one what they were doing in daily life. Everyone there, in a group of about 12, was either teaching or studying at college or university, or in some way involved in the educational scene, except one young man who admitted a little shamefacedly that he was only a motor mechanic, to which I replied that I was very pleased to meet him, and could wish that we had a few more motor mechanics or similar occupations, and a few less academics. But perhaps that is because I am not an academic myself. The promotion I had accepted after my second marriage was to lead to greater success, and it was not long before the managing director was asking me to take another step up and become manager of the southern region for the company. I had never wanted to become an executive, and resisted the proposal by pointing out that being a Christadelphian, as he knew, my philosophy of life was based on the teaching of Jesus. What shall it profit a man if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? And I had no intention of selling my soul to the business. I did not wish to become involved in the social whirl, the whining and dining that so often accompanies such positions, and thought he should look to some of my more ambitious colleagues who would jump at the chance. But the more I protested, the more he seemed to want me, and in the end asked me, would I take the post if he accepted all my reservations? So I did, and it meant a move to the head office in London. That was how we came to join the West Hendon meeting. It is impossible to mention West Hendon Ecclesia without also mentioning Vincent Holderness, who founded it in the 1930s, and whose zeal and energy helped it to grow to be, at the time we joined it, one of the most progressive ecclesias in the greater London area. He was one of those rare specimens, a character, colourful enough to be remembered with affection by all who knew him, yet strong enough to get things done, even at the expense of the occasional toe-treading. The story of how he got the West Hendon meeting going would be better told by others who had first-hand experience of his methods, such as Brother Bert and Sister Mabel Baker, who were among his earliest converts, if not actually the first. But it all started from his home on a new estate, where Bert and Mabel moved in opposite and were immediately collared by Vincent, who started a Bible class in his home. Before long they were having lectures in his front room, and I recall him telling me once with his evergreen enthusiasm how he had as many as 20 people attending his home to hear the word expounded. With the gradual increase of baptized members, they eventually set up a more formal ecclesia in West Hendon, which will be remembered by, I would think it no exaggeration to say, hundreds of Christadelphians who have since been members there for short or long periods. It is an example of what can be achieved by one man initially, with a loyal wife and zeal and determination to do something for the truth. It may also tell us something about the fruitfulness of personal preaching from our own homes. It is not necessary to have large numbers and public halls, desirable though they may be, to get something going for God. When the disciples were scattered abroad after the persecution which followed Stephen's martyrdom, as recorded in Acts chapter 8, they went everywhere preaching the word, though for some reason the apostles were still allowed to remain in Jerusalem. Their headquarters was gone, and they were all dispersed, yet such was their zeal that great numbers were added to the church by their individual efforts. Such was the zeal of Vincent Holderness too in founding the Hendon Ecclesia with the blessing and help of the Lord. In passing, I recall that some years ago, the Institute of Sales Managers conducted a survey to find out which qualities their members considered the most important in their representatives. I suppose most people who know nothing about the matter would likely put what is commonly called the gift of the gab, or the ability to tell a good story, it being the popular view that salesmen spend most of their time propping up bars and telling risque yarns. In fact, these are probably the least successful. I myself, being an ex-sales manager, would have settled for integrity as the most necessary virtue, for I found that customers like to be able to trust the man they're dealing with. But the quality which came out top of the poll in this survey was enthusiasm. And I suppose this is about the equivalent of the New Testament word zeal. We may note in passing that our brother was a salesman, and a very successful salesman, for one of the largest organisations in the country. And he brought to the preaching of the gospel the same enthusiasm with which he conducted his daily work. Perhaps there is a lesson there, too. Although we only stayed in the Hendon meeting for about 4 years, they were among the happiest of our lives. There were a number of alert minds there, including Brother Fred Barling, with whom we had some stimulating Bible class discussions. Fred is another character, of a very different kind of Vincent, with a sharp and intellectual approach to the truth. He was recording Brother at the time we were there, and very efficient in the job, yet I personally found him to possess a great warmth and deep sincerity, with an overpowering desire to act towards people in a truly Christian way. We once had a debate on Sunday evening, in place of the usual 4 to 5 minute lecture, on the subject of the problem of evil, about which we had slightly differing views. I cannot now remember exactly what these differences were, but I think it brought the biggest attendance on Sunday evening, which we had all the time we were there. The thing which makes me recall it, however, is that it showed that brethren can discuss differences without needing to fall out or to try to score off the other. We thought it would stimulate interest to present two points of view round the table, and this was done as between friends. Why cannot we do it more often? Sitting in rows, listening to a monologue, is not the only, or in these days necessarily, the best way of arousing interest in biblical subjects. A brother once remarked to me of another brother who was involved in one of the interminable divisive arguments which have plagued our community, if only he would admit just once that he might be wrong. You never hear him ever say that some point made by an opponent is something he has not thought of. Well, it was probably true of the brother in question, but it is equally true of almost all those who engage in theological debate. I do not recall in all my years in the body, when issues have been publicly debated, ever hearing one of the protagonists admit that his opponent may have had a reasonable point of which he had not thought, or to which he had given insufficient weight. Unfortunately, it becomes a matter of honour to maintain a position and not to yield anything which would diminish the case of those he represents. I sometimes think we can be so interested in defending what we like to call the truth that we forget the interest of truth. Thinking of Fred Barling reminds me also of an occasion when he appeared to give a special lecture for us one evening in his earlier days, bearing all the marks of having been in a fight. On inquiry, we found he had been injured on the rugby field, for he played at that time for the Wasps Rugby Football Club, which was, and indeed still is, one of the leading clubs in the country. I never saw him play, but can well believe he would be a little terrier into the tackle, a characteristic which he carries into his verbal battles as well. His brother Tom is also well known in the Brotherhood, and has done sterling work in the Bible mission field, notably in France. He once published a request for anybody able to write in French to submit articles for the French magazine he was editing, and probably writing himself. As I had done French at school, up to school certificate standard only, I regret to say, I had the temerity to laboriously write an article for him, but heard nothing back. After some time, I happened to be speaking at a fraternal gathering in Birmingham with his brother, Fred. So over tea, I mentioned that I'd sent Tom an article, but had heard nothing back. This provoked roars of laughter from the little terrier, who had evidently heard all about my effort, and told me that Tom had been too embarrassed to reply. He had complained to Fred that it took him longer to correct my French than to write the article himself. So in future, I've given up any idea of trying to be a linguist, though we remain the best of friends. My business life had prospered to the extent that I was now pressed into accepting the post of national sales manager. And as a result of takeovers and mergers, we had become about the biggest company in our field. From a humble rep in Oxford, I was now the boss in London, flying all over Great Britain and Northern Ireland, holding sales conferences and generally enjoying the status of success. Yet I decided, with the full agreement of my wife Ingrid, to give it all up and try to get a quieter way of life. In spite of my determination not to get involved in the whining and dining clique, I found the job was taking over, and when a picture taken at a trade conference showing me in a group with sherry glasses in their hands appeared in one of the trade papers, I felt that I was not really being true to myself. This was not the life I wanted. This was the very thing I had said I did not wish to happen when I took on the job. So I began to look for alternative employment, even if it meant lowering in what is euphemistically called lifestyle. In the end, after about 4 years of success, I left it all behind and got a place on a college course to train as a careers advisor in the education service. It took 1 year full time to get the necessary diploma, living on a student's grant of about £600 per annum. But it got me out of the rat race, and I've never regretted the change, even though the financial rewards were about half my salary as a sales manager. Some brethren thought I left the business because I didn't like the job in sales. This is not really the case. It was quite pleasant in many ways to be the boss and to have power. The flesh enjoys these outward trappings of success. My trouble was that I was afraid of it and what it might do to me. One brother urged me to start a campaign to get all brethren out of sales, but I pointed out to him that I had no such intention. Mine was a purely personal decision. There are brethren who I know hold down much more important jobs than I had and manage very well to keep their integrity as Christadelphians. Some of them are veritable captains of industry in multinational corporations who yet find no difficulty in holding their positions. They are bigger men than I, and perhaps more conditioned to it than I was. My employers were very understanding when I explained why I was leaving, and ironically gave me a great send-off in a private suite at the Hilton Hotel in London, which was just what I didn't want. I sent a circular letter of explanation to all my area managers and representatives and got back a shoal of replies which I've kept to this day for sentimental reasons. Many of these purely worldly men were quite touching in their tributes, and it was clear that some of the least likely were, in fact, envious of the faith which enabled me to make such a drastic change at the age of 50, and themselves had secretly nursed ambitions to extricate themselves from the commercial struggle and choose some other career which would fulfill them more, but couldn't bring themselves to do it. The company gave me a second-hand car as a parting present, and we were off to Dartford to join the training course for the work of helping and guiding young people at school in the difficult business of selecting and preparing for their future careers. One amusing footnote to all this, though it was far from amusing at the time, was that on the very Sunday before I handed in my month's notice, I had an accident with my company car, going to a speaking date at Southampton, and had to leave it in a garage by the roadside. I never saw it again. So on the morrow, I not only had the task of informing the managing director that I was leaving, but also that I'd smashed up his car. These things seemed terrible at the time, but we lived to chuckle over them. There is a lesson somewhere there.